Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Just like that, the second hour is here. Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Outkick.com/watch is where you can find us live each and every day. Then across the Outkick Network platform, on the socials, certainly on YouTube for clips, highlights, and more. You can certainly subscribe there. We hope you will. Just search out Outkick. And Chad, a podcast available. A plethora of options. Wherever you can find your audio, like.
So many options. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Grindr. is that one of them? No, okay. Those are the ones that I
we'll
know.
We'll have to confirm with some of the, studio.
I'll confirm with someone in the studio or here at 60
Chad
Peabody.
Can't confirm.
Can't confirm, but those are the five that I know.
For research, I'll
research and find some other platforms soon. But I guarantee Colin's got us on that platform too. Not Grindr, whatever other podcast platforms exist. Yes, he's got us there.
Yes. Coming up, Mike Renner will join us. We'll talk NFL draft. It was NFL draft time in 2004. It was Thursday, April 22nd, 2004, when our next guest found out that the player and the person that made the biggest impact on his life had died. And that man and that hero was Pat Tillman, who left the NFL, left his NFL career to serve our country after being motivated by the September 11th attacks. He and his brother went to serve as Army Rangers. And no one that I know, Chad, and that you know or have come across knew Pat Tillman like this guy. Dave McGinnis joins us. Coach Mack, thank you for the time.
Oh, absolutely. Chad, it's good to be on with you guys.
Great having you on, Coach. Thanks for joining us to talk about what I even told you was one of my favorite all-time Americans with his story.
Mac,
it's hard not to have him as one of your favorites if you even know just a little bit about the story. And, of course, those of us that were close to him, his memory and his life will never leave us.
Mac, what moment do you think about the most in your interactions with Tillman?
Well, I mean, you know, I was with Tilly from the start because when he played there at Arizona State, his senior year, it was the year after they had gone to the Rose Bowl. We had drafted Jake Plummer, the quarterback, the year before, and he and Pat were very close. And then, you know, the next year when Pat was coming out and it was his turn to be vetted in the National Football League draft, Pat was a Pac-10 defensive player of the year, but he played a walk-away linebacker, Hutt, which, I mean, he wasn't a safety. He wasn't a linebacker. He was just a damn good football player. And so as the draft, you know, of course, we were right there in Phoenix, and of course, they're right there, the Arizona State is right down the road in Tempe, and kept our eye on him football-wise, you know, for quite a while. And so when they had the pro day over there at Sun Devil Stadium, well, then myself and Larry Marmee, at the time, who'd been a former head coach there at Arizona State and then was my secondary coach at the time when I was the defensive coordinator, and then Bob Ferguson, the general manager, we went to the pro day expressly to work Pat Tillman out after he had gone through all the things with the other 31 teams. And so, because we wanted to see, you know, to put him through some drills and just to see, you know, if there might be a possibility that, because, you know, he wasn't a linebacker size and he had never played safety, but we thought that we might have a chance, you know, to have him do something there because he was just such a hell of a player. So anyway, we go over there and we ask him if he'll come over to the practice fields that are named after a longtime assistant coach there named Hank Kajikawa. And so we went over there and took him to those fields and just said, Pat, we're going to put you through some drills here for the defensive back. Are you all right? Cool, coach. Pat was from San Jose. He was he's a California dude, and it was cool, coach. You know, he had a cutoff shirt, shorts, put his cleats on with no socks, took his shirt off and said, all right, let's go. So we started putting him through some drills that were linear drills, you know, further down the field, you know, flipping his hips and running and turning, chasing balls, you know, that something with depth that he had, you know, never had to do because he'd played close to the line of scrimmage. And of course, you know, his footwork wasn't exactly perfect, and his hip turn, didn't exactly have it right. And then he was diving for balls. And I mean, all of a sudden, he was scraped up, and, you know, because he had no shirt on. And, you know, after about 15 minutes of that, I said, "Hey, Pat, that's good." He said, "No, coach, that's not good. You know, I suck." And I said, "Well, wait a minute. This is not what this is about." He said, no, I suck. Let's do some more. Just let me continue to do." So we go about another 15 minutes. And right then I knew the essence of Pat Tillman. Well, when it comes draft time, you know, we get to the seventh round and we're getting closer to the end of it, pick 226. And, you know, I stand up with Larry Marmee and also, you know, Bob Ferguson and our head coach Vince Tobin at the time. I said, "Hey, you know, if it matters, you know, who we want on this day, we want Pat Tillman." And so we drafted him and, you know, felt like really that, you know, if he came in, he would give us a pretty good chance, maybe to be a really good special teams player for us. And then, you know, probably could make our roster at the time just because of the way he approached the game. Well, about 3 days later, my secretary calls and says, "Pat Tillman is here at the office. Could you have time to talk to him?" And I said, "Well, absolutely. Send him in." Well, here he comes. You know, of course, he's got the hair, you know, he's got the surfer hair flowing clear down middle of his back. He's got that cut off shirt, and he's got flip flops on and short. He rode his bike, you know, he rode his bike up there. And then he come down, sit down right in front of me and just looks at me and says, "Hey, I know why you drafted me, because, you know, I'm pretty well liked here," which was an understatement, you know, in Tempe. I mean, he and Jake Plummer were pretty much, I mean,
beloved. Yeah.
That's all it was. I mean, it was tremendous. And he said, I know that. And he said, "You think I'll be a special teams player for you? Might get a few more people in the stands." He said, "Look me right in the eye. I said, if you just spend some damn time with me, coach, I'll be your starting safety." And I went, "Okay, I will." I did. And he was. And so, I mean, you know, that's where it all started from. And then, of course, you know, during the course of him playing, I mean, his role expanded. And pretty soon, I mean, he was putting up really big numbers. And I mean, he had played himself. He was on the all Madden team. You know, Madden loved him. I mean, he had played himself into exactly who he was. Pat Tillman was a very, very intellectual dude. He had an outstanding intellect, and he was a very driven person. But he was also, I mean, he was a man's man. But he was also he's a Renaissance guy, because this guy would read, and he could talk to you. He and I would sit on those plastic trash cans that you use when you walk through before your practice starts. He'd come out early, and we'd sit there, and we would talk about anything but football. I mean, he was a very, very interesting, I mean, just a guy that you immediately, just because of the way he approached things. And, you know, his teammates gravitated towards him, and it was everything that you would, you know, that you could think of. And so his restricted free agent year, he had an offer. Mike Martz was the head coach at the Rams at the time, because Mike Martz had been at Arizona State. And they made him an offer. They brought him in and visited and made him an extensive offer. I think, you know, as a seventh round player at that time, I think we were paying him like a little over $500,000. And they offered him a multi-year contract in millions with an S. I mean, a lot of money.
Yeah.
More than $550,000. So I figured, you know what, guys, he's gone. And his agent, you know, Frank Bauer called me and told me what they had offered him. And I said, "That's fine." I said, "You know what? Tilly has earned this. He's earned it. And I hate to lose him, but, you know, God bless him. That's the business. And that's also something that if there's anybody more deserving than Pat, I can't think of who it is." So 3 days later, I go down. I didn't hear from him. 3 days later, I go downstairs to work out in our weight room, and he's on the treadmill running. I'm kind of looking, going, "Okay." So I walk over to him. I said, "Tilly, what's up, coach?" I said, "How was your visit?" "It was cool, coach. It was cool." He just kept running. So finally, I reached over and turned the machine off. I said, "Pat," I said, "coach, what are you doing?" I said, "Look, I know what you were offered. I understand. I've been in this business a lot longer than you have. You've earned every bit of this. I'm happy for you, happy for your family. So just know that. Know that you have my blessings, and it comes from me, even though you don't need it. You've earned all of this." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Pat, I know what they offered you. And you know, you're not going to, that's not going to be matched here. right now. I'm just telling you that because I've always been honest with you. He said, Coach, you guys are the only ones that believed in me when I was coming out. Nobody else even gave me a chance. For me to leave now just for money, that's bullshit. I'm staying here. I went, okay. Now, who does that? Nobody.
Yeah. No one.
No one. Especially with Bidwell paying you, Mac. Dave McGinnis.
Well, it doesn't matter.
You're right.
Any club.
You're right. Dave McGinnis any with club. Us. Coach Mac, we're honoring, we do this each year on April 22nd. This is the 20th, hard to believe it's been that long, 20th anniversary of Pat Tillman tragically passing away in Afghanistan while serving our country. Mac, that time you're describing on the treadmill, that was right after the 2020 season, the 2000 season going into 2001. We were all impacted greatly by 9/11. Why did it impact Pat Tillman so much more, he and his brother?
Well, you know, I can't speak to that, you know, personally, because I didn't ask, but I know Pat's reaction to it. Of course, I was a head coach then. Then I was a head coach, and then we were scheduled to go play in Washington, D.C., and then, of course, the Pentagon's hit. So, I mean, that was a very chaotic and a very scary time for all of us in the nation.
Yeah.
It really was. And you can imagine, in the National Football League, especially with a team that was scheduled to go into Washington, D.C., I mean, there was a lot going on. I called the team together. We had a team meeting. You know, everybody came up. We had a team meeting. And I said, I don't know what's going to happen right now. We're waiting for some word from the league, but everybody stay together. I promise you that I will keep you posted. And then when I broke that meeting, I can remember Pat going into the PR office, which was off of our big meeting room. And on the television was still, you know, the continuous coverage that was running on, of course, what was going on in New York City, you know, with 9/11. And Pat just sat there, just kind of transfixed in front of that television for so long. And I can remember Paul Jensen, you know, the PR director at the time, you know, calling me and saying, Mac, you know, Tilly's still down here. And I said, that's fine. You know, Tilly can do well. The next day, the Arizona Republic guys had run a full back page of the Arizona Republic was an American flag. And so, you know, I go down to have meetings in the morning with the guys because I had a little more information now from the league. And Tilly had cut that American flag out and had pasted it right on the glass wall. We had two big glass wall, big meeting rooms that were in the theater type setting for the team meeting room. He pasted it on the defensive window, you know, and I said, and I looked at that and I went, okay. Well, then we go on and, you know, we have a season. Well, then, you know, then Pat's an unrestricted free agent. He and Marie are going to get married. So he's not at the mini camps because he's not under contract. And I'm kind of waiting after mini camp, you know, to hear from him, you know, after his wedding, he had a honeymoon. And then I get a call and he said, Coach Mac, we need to talk. You got time for me now? And I said, well, sure. Come on up. So, you know, I waited. He came up to my office, came in and closed the door. Pat Tillman, you know, I mean, with Pat Tillman, there was never anything. I mean, he was always straightforward. I mean, and he dealt with things straight up face to face. You know, when you're a head coach in the league, guys, you got a big desk. And, you know, people come in and talk to you and you're sitting in your chair or sitting on the other side of the desk. That's not what Tilly did. He went in there, he grabbed that chair and pulled it clear around right face to face with me. And he looked at me and said, Mac, here's what I'm going to do. Then he proceeded to tell me that he and his brother, Kevin, who was with the Cleveland Indians organization, were going to enlist in the Army. And then that, you know, when they enlisted in the Army, they were going to go into basic training. And then if they had a chance, they were going to try to qualify for Ranger school. I'm sitting there listening to all this, you know, and guys, I knew Pat well enough then. And I mean, I knew him extremely well because I'd been with him all of those years, you know, defensive meetings, on the sideline in games, and I knew him well enough then to insult him by saying, have you thought about this? Because Pat Tillman thought about everything. And so the one thing I did ask him, I said, Pat, you know, I support you, whatever you're doing in this decision. I support you also. I said, but I'm going to ask you a question. I said, have you thought about how you're going to handle this? Because this is going to be a major, major media occurrence. Major occurrence. He looked me straight in the eye and said, Coach Mac, I'm never saying a word about it. He said, I said, well, who's going to handle this for you? He said, you are. You're good at this stuff. And so that was basically it. And he never, you know, he never spoke again about it, because Pat Tillman did not want any type of special treatment that he was enlisting, you know, to serve our country just as Pat Tillman. He wanted to do it as, you know, he did it just as a citizen. He said, I'm no different than the men and women that are already in there. He said, what have I done? And so anyway, the one thing I did do, because, you know, I've always, in my coaching career, I've had great respect for the press, both, you know, locally and nationally, wherever I've been. And I knew how big this story was going to be, guys. So I told our PR director, Paul Jensen, I said, call a guy named Kent Summers, who was the lead reporter for the Arizona Republic, called Darren Urban of the Tribune, the lead reporter who, you know, who had practiced every day. And then Mike Jarecki, who had the top sports radio talk show host, talk show there in Arizona in the Phoenix market. I said, bring these guys up here, because I'm going to tell them before this breaks nationally, because I owe that to them. And so, you know, I did, and they appreciated that. And then Kent Summers, you know, had enough a relationship with Pat that he got a hold of Pat, said, Pat, Coach Mack has told us, he said, would you like to make a statement? He said, no, I told him I'm not talking. And that's it. I mean, Kent Summers just wrote another article, you know, on his 20-year anniversary.
It was great too, Mac. You shared it with us.
So yeah. So anyway, he goes and we don't hear from him. Larry Marmee gets one letter from him. And then he's in that first group that is deployed to Iraq, to Baghdad. And then he comes back from that tour duty. He's stationed at Fort Lewis in Seattle. And then I hear from him.
Coach, what was this day like for you in 2004 when you got the news that Pat Tillman had tragically died? And the response from everyone, and you knew how popular he was in that market, but when you started to see the response nationally but also locally and how many lives he touched, how meaningful was that to you to understand that you weren't the only one who thought so highly of Pat Tillman?
Yeah, Chad, and it's a very real question, because I mean, all of us, you know, as we go through life, I think have been touched by tragedy, either ourselves or somebody we're close to. And in those moments, time kind of takes a different turn. It seems like it slows down, but at the same time, it speeds up. I mean, you're kind of caught in a time warp. And then, as soon as I heard, I mean, I heard here, you know, I was here now working for Jeff Fisher as his linebacker coach and his assistant head coach. We were in the draft room preparing our draft board. You know, it was on a Thursday, and we were preparing the draft board. And then Robbie Boren, the PR director here, who's still here, he came up and all of a sudden he called Fish out of the draft meeting. And I'm going, this is strange. And so then all of a sudden Fish comes back in the room and looks at me and goes, Mac, we need to see you. And I go, okay, now what the hell? You know, and so as I walk out, I mean, Fish tells me, says, Robbie just wanted to bring the news and let you know that Pat Tillman has been killed in Afghanistan. And so you talk about time then. I mean, time starts speeding up. It starts slowing down. And then, you know, and I start getting all kind of requests because, you know, the family, you know, they ask me to handle all of the national, you know, the Fox News, you know, the NBC, CBS, ABC, all the morning shows, everything. All of a sudden, you know, I'm in that world, you know, explaining, not explaining, but just, you know, still in a little bit of a state of suspended disbelief, you know, about what's going on. And then it goes over into, you know, I was asked to go to San Jose and speak at the big memorial service out there. And then it got really surreal because now I'm kept in a house out there with Maria Shriver and, you know, Senator John McCain and all the, you know, the Navy SEALs and the Rangers and this, the whole thing, Chad, was I began to realize the magnitude of it, which I knew it was going to be, but it's kind of like being in the vortex of the tornado. I mean, you're right in the middle of it and everything is swirling around you, and you're really having a hard time sometimes, you know, staying grounded.
And the last time that when you found this out, Mac, the last time you had talked with him was where you saw him or got tickets for him in Seattle. And he told you he was going back, I believe, because he felt like he was letting people down.
No, you know, I mean, I'd get a call from Tilly, you know, when they're back. And of course, you know, hadn't heard from him. Of course, it's typical Pat. I mean, he just calls, you know, the secretary says, Pat Tillman's on the phone. And I said, let me have it.
Yeah.
Coach, what's up? I'm back. I'm up here in Seattle. Y'all are coming up here to play. He said, I'd like to buy some tickets. And I said, what? I said, you want what? He said, Coach, I want to buy some tickets. I want to come to the game. I want to see the – I said, Pat, what the hell? I said, wait a minute. So I go down to Mr. Bidwell's office, and I tell him who I've got on the phone. He said, hey, tell him whatever he wants, whatever he needs. So I come back and tell him, look, we'll get it fixed up. You know, how many you bring in, who you bringing with you. We'll get you hotel rooms. Coach, I don't want – I said, Pat, just please let me do this. And so, you know, we do that. And then when we show up there, I mean, he's already checked in the hotel room with his wife and his friends. He brought, all, you know, some friends from San Jose that he had grown up with. And so anyway, I said, Pat, look, would you like to speak with the team? And he said, no, it's not about me, Mac. They're trying to play a game. I know it's not about me. I just want to see him. I'd like to spend some time with him after the game if you don't care. I said, Pat, please. So anyway, I finally talked him into coming down to the team breakfast in that morning. And he said, you know, so he called Marie. When he was with me that night, I got, you know, of course, this is in a suite, you know, and I had food ordered up there and brought Coach Marmee up there with me and Pat and all his friends. And we were up there, you know, for quite a while, pretty late. And as he was leaving, you know, I'll never forget. I mean, we had a big, just in my mind, it had a big tray of cookies. He said, Coach, can I take some of these down for? I said, Pat, take whatever you want. He said, hey, what time you get up in the morning? I said, well, early. There's a Starbucks, you know, across the street. I mean, shocker, there's a Starbucks in Seattle. And he said, I'd like to talk some more with you and Coach Marmee. And I said, sure. So we go over there that morning, and we're just sitting there. And I just, you know, straight up said, Pat, what do you want to do? He said, Coach, look, I made a commitment, and I'm going to serve out my entire tour duty, because he could have gotten out after that first tour. He said, my entire tour of duty. And I said, well, what do you want to do then? He said, I want to come back and play. He said, you know, because he had made Rangers, he had done that. He said, I want to come back and play. And I said, well, Pat, I don't know where I'm going to be, because you know how this business is. I said, but wherever I am, you've got a place. He said, I know that. That's what I wanted to hear. And so, you know, we talked a little bit more. Then I said, would you just come to the team breakfast, please? He said, Coach, I said, Pat, all right, let me talk to Marie, because I, you know. So he did. And then all of a sudden he calls me and he says, Mac, I'll come down to breakfast. You know how a team breakfast is. You guys ever been before a game? You know, everybody's kind of comes in, filters in at different times, but there's a set time, because then you're going to have meetings and then you're going to get on the bus and you're going to go to the stadium. When Pat Tillman walked into that room, guys, I mean, it was like, because some of the younger players that were on there, you know, had never been on a team with Pat, so they only knew the legend of Pat Tillman.
Right.
The guys that had come with him, I mean, the whole room just went, you talk about a room just going, I mean, it was dead silence. And people were just, you know, just staring at him. And then all of a sudden, the older guys, you know, they rush him. And then it's, you know, so he hangs around for a little while. And then, you know, we go to the game. And then after the game, Paul Jensen closes the locker room to the media after the game so that Pat can come in. And I invited Kevin in, too. But he said, Coach, this is for Pat. And so we close the locker room. And Pat, until he comes in and you know, goes around and, you know, shakes hands and hugs the necks of all the guys and talking to them. And then, you know, comes up to me and said, Coach, I can't thank you enough. I said, Pat, please. And he says, I want to hold you to what you said. I said, you know, it's there. And then, you know, he said, I love you, Coach. I said, I love you, Tilly. And that's the last time I saw him alive.
American hero, Pat Tillman, Coach Mack, remembering the 20th anniversary of his passing. He was 27 years old. His legacy lives on. And you mentioned you would help him when he came back, Mack. His legacy is helping other military members, service members, veterans, spouses, when they come back with academic scholarships. It's the Pat Tillman Foundation, PatTillmanFoundation.org. Just had the Pat's Run most recently. And over the years, 20 years now, $34 million have been invested to date. They've helped over 850 Tillman scholars, and they've reached over 166 universities, and it continues to grow throughout all military branches. The legacy lives on, Mac, and I know this is something that is near and dear to you with Pat's Run.
It absolutely is, and the whole thing is. And of course, I was on the initial board of that foundation. You know that Alex Garwood, his brother-in-law, you know, they married sisters, asked me to be on, and I was glad to do that. I mean, I think he had Colin Powell on there, Senator McCain, and I mean, and so it germinated. It started with a bunch of guys just meeting, and you know, they talked about maybe we can have a run. We can get 1,000 people here. Can run. We can call it Pat's Run. Well, it'll be 4.2 miles because Pat's jersey number at Arizona State was 42. We'll run around Tempe Town Lake. We'll end on the 42-yard line in Sun Devil. Maybe we can raise a little money. The first race had, you know, close to maybe 4,000 people. This last weekend, 30,000 people at the race in Tempe. And then there's satellite races that go around all over the country simultaneously, and then plus overseas at military installations. It's really been an amazing the impact of Pat Tillman. It just continues to grow. I just did a speaking engagement in Bowling Green for Pinnacle Bank and for the Chamber of Commerce over there with about 250 people, and it's inevitable because I speak around the country a lot, and Pat's story comes up, you know, inevitably. And one or two people will come up after the talk that said, you know, Coach Mack, thank you. I served in Afghanistan with Pat, or I was in during the time, or you know, the reach of what he meant and what he still means is incredible. And Pat would want none of it. Yeah, Pat would want right. none of it. He never wanted any acknowledgement that he was anything special other than, doing, you know, just being full of honesty and integrity and dignity and serving his country.
He's an American and a hero for all of us. Mac always tells his story, Chad, as you well know, at the Mac Hutt dinners. We always either begin or finish with a Pat Tillman story that I've never even heard before each time. It's unbelievable. And Mac, thank you for giving us plenty of your time here to honor Pat Tillman. We'll do this. We do this each year. And you're right, he lived it. Honesty, integrity, dignity, those are words we can throw about, but he lived this.
He did it.
And you do such a fantastic job keeping that memory alive and your memories of him and his certain legacy alive. Thank you, Mac. We appreciate you, man.
Well, thank both of you. And as I said, I've been fortunate enough in my career, guys, to be on the field with 8 Gold Jacket Hall of Fame members, coached with 2 Hall of Fame coaches. Nobody in hundreds of players that I've coached in, you know, the 39 years that I've been in this league have impacted nor touched my life the way Pat Tillman did.
Yep. So well said. Thank you, Coach Mack.
Thank you, Mac.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
There's Coach Mack, Dave McGinnis, with a great way to honor the legacy of Pat Tillman. Coming up, NFL draft discussion. We get back to on-the-field decisions to be made for 32 teams, and well, we've got Mike Renner back in studio with us. He'll be on part of the Bleacher Report coverage coming up end of this week and into the weekend. But we've got him next right here in studio here on Hot Mike. Chad, do you have one of those Make Lawns Great Again shirt?
I don't. I need one. I need one. My lawn is in pristine condition right now, so I'm actually living by that mantra.
The Thursday Night Mowing League, some of my favorite gear. And it's sold out, I believe, a couple times. Hot Mike Hutton Withrow here at outkick.com/watch. Mike Renner in studio with us as we talk NFL draft. Back in studio. Mike, thank you for the time, man, and looking forward to catching some of the Bleacher Report coverage that you'll be hosting alongside some legit NFL superstars.
Yeah, it's going to be me, C.J. Stroud, Texans QB, and Micah Parsons. I don't know how much they know about the draft. But
who cares?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
you're there.
That's quite the top billing that you have there with those two guys. So that's awesome.
Well, I was gonna say for me, but I guess
I'm saying you're
cool
the top
too.
Billing. You're gonna have to carry them, you know, with knowledge, and that's how it works sometimes.
Yeah, we had Micah on last year, and when the Cowboys were up, like he was stressed. Like that guy lives it. Like I feel like a lot of NFL players, the draft, they almost like get upset because they're like, oh, this guy's going to take my job. He was like, no, we need to draft a good player. And so like, if they like, if you don't draft a good player, he would have been pissed off.
Well, and they weren't able to do anything in free agency this year. So imagine what he's going to be like now when they this is how they help their roster the only way they will based on cap.
Yeah, wild that they didn't. I mean they we'll see because that roster, it just got depleted, that O-line.
O-line and running back too, right?
Yeah.
So, Mike, we had this discussion earlier today, Commanders at number two. Mm-hmm. And we were getting into Drake May versus Jaden Daniels and sort of the merits of a lot of the stuff that's out there about Jaden Daniels maybe not wanting to go to the Commanders. Looking at those two guys as players, though, where do you fall in the debate between the two?
Well, I wouldn't want to go to the Commanders either. I've seen that offensive line. It's a disaster. Whoever's going there is going to have their work cut out for them. I think, though, I mean, my take is I've said Drake May and Caleb Williams are like in a tier of their own this whole season. And nothing I saw on tape this past fall dissuaded me from that. I thought both had to deal with probably the toughest situations of any of these quarterbacks in the draft in terms of the offensive lines that they had, in terms of the receiving talent that they were throwing to. And for May to even put up the stats he did, that was, I mean, week in and week out, he was having to deal with what it's going to look like in the NFL in terms of the receivers that he had open, the pressure that he was under. Jaden Daniels, it was kind of the opposite. He's kind of was in that cushy situation that you worry about with like the Justin Fields of the world, where he was really never under pressure. His offensive linemen aren't getting drafted this year because they were young, but we'll see them next year, the left and right tackle that he had. The two receivers that he had that were thrown to were 4-3 guys who were going to be top 20 picks. And I mean, a lot of times he was just letting them cook. So I still think he's super talented. But to me, I do think that Drake May has the more immediate NFL translatable game. But Daniels is like right up in that mix himself. I'm not trying to knock Daniels too hard. He'll go shortly after that if he doesn't go number two overall.
Mike, I don't know where you come down on J.J. McCarthy as I ask this. Make the case for J.J. McCarthy being the quarterback of your organization. And either you're either drafting him top five or you're trading up to the top five to get him, because it seems like that's going to be the case.
He's an easy sell to the fan base from a personality standpoint. He is going to do every single thing right. You know, a lot of times we talk about talent and like we look at past drafts and why guys failed. And more often than not, it's not necessarily talent related. It is between the ears related. It is what that guy brings week in, week out, day in and day out. And with McCarthy, you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get 110% his maximum effort. If he fails in the NFL, it is not going to be because of the reasons like Zach Wilson fails, Jamarcus Russell fails, a lot of the all-time busts at the position and why they failed. It's going to be because, well, you know, he just didn't have the, you know, the goods at the end of the day. But it's not going to be for, you know, everyone in the locker room is going to have his back no matter what. So I do think that's the biggest thing, is that you can trust him to progress year on year and do what it takes to get better. And maybe his best isn't going to be good enough. And in college, I have questions about whether his best is going to be good enough, but it's not going to be, you know, you're not going to have the lack of confidence situations that you've had from a lot of early round picks of quarterbacks that have been busts.
So I know I made this point to Chad earlier. If J.J. McCarthy, if you're sold on him, take him, right? If you're there at the pick, I'm just not sold on trading future drafts, right? And can you make the case that you're giving up future first-round picks to go get him compared to quarterbacks that we've seen teams chase in the quarterback draft, and then there's the rest of the draft? Teams chase quarterbacks because, well, they've got to have that guy. Is he that guy?
I don't think he's to that level. And that's what I worry about, especially in today's day and age, where when you have good situations for quarterbacks, Brock Purdy's can put up big numbers, right? And like, so if you're throwing away all these picks that are going to give him that good situation that you're talking about, I struggle with that, because I think we're seeing an influx also of quarterback talent in terms of like, it's giving up all these picks for him when maybe you could stand pat and get a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix, who put up darn good numbers in their own right. And like got their teams to places that were not expected to be in their own right. So, and I do think every single year we're kind of seeing it. There is going to be another quarterback class next year that if you give up a top five pick, or we're seeing with Carolina right now, if you give up that future first, it could be a guy who's also special. So, yeah, I struggle with when the price gets high, when you're talking about these teams trading up, especially those teams in that 11 to 13 range, for a guy like J.J. McCarthy.
So what is the separation between J.J. McCarthy and the two guys you just mentioned from the Pac-12 this past year, Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix? Because We all agree you don't give up the huge haul to go up and get J.J. McCarthy if those guys are the options, but is there a separation between McCarthy and those two other guys?
I don't see it, truthfully. I have them. I have actually him and Penix similarly graded, and then I actually have Knicks ahead of those two on my board. To me, McCarthy, two big things against him that I watch when I flip on the tape. One is that they just like didn't trust him throw. You know, flat out, they didn't ask him to go out there and win games. You know, it was a run-first team. They never switched off that. And you would think at some point, you know, at some point he would have to have it on his back and go win games. And he didn't. The one time he kind of did was back last year, TCU game in the semifinals, and he threw a terrible pick six and dug him an even bigger hole, and he kind of clawed out of it, but it still wasn't great. And then the second biggest thing is he never throws with touch. I mean, he loves to show off that arm. He has a big arm, but he throws lasers constantly, even when the throw doesn't require. And so that's why you see him put the ball into linebacker's chest a lot of the times. And that's something that I don't trust a guy to learn at this point in time when he's been playing quarterback his entire life. So those two things would worry me if I am going to bat for him highly. But obviously, I see the talent still there. I still have kind of a back end of the first, late, early second sort of grade on him.
So it feels like Joe Walt to the Titans is the easiest slam dunk of the top 10 picks of need and top guy at the position being available. Is it a slam dunk, Mike, that he is going to be available for the Titans at 7?
I don't think it's a slam dunk that he's going to be available, because in the top 10 this year, it's OTs and wide receivers. And history has shown that you're more likely to find an elite wide receiver in the second and third round. And this class is a deep class, especially, that you can find one. Not necessarily an elite OT. So you may have teams like the Chargers, Giants ahead of them, that are looking at that saying, you know, I got a second rounder that I could get like a Keon Coleman at, and he could be a number one wide receiver for me, and I could have a number one OT and a number one wide receiver. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he falls to 7, but I will say that if he does fall to 7, I would be very surprised if they pass on him given what they need.
Is Dallas Turner your number one defensive player on the board?
He's not.
Okay.
But I have.
Before you say it,
yeah.
How far do you have that player on the board before you draft him over an offensive talent in this year's draft? And I know need plays a factor. Let's just say, just in general, if you're just going by big board.
Okay, so I think I have 10 offensive players before Dallas Turner.
Okay.
It's pretty insane. I mean, the three tackles that I think are just like special tackles are Alt, Olufashinu from Penn State, and J.C. Latham from Alabama. I mean, Latham is a unique physical specimen that's one of the best run-blocking prospects like I've ever seen. He is going to be nasty in that regard.
And teams will like each one differently.
And so those guys, like, Fashinu is your more pass protector, Latham's your run blocker. Which one you want, that depends on the scheme you're going to run. So those three, I think, are all incredible players. And then I have three quarterbacks ahead of them.
Okay.
And then I have
three receivers
ahead of them. And then I have Brock Bowers ahead of him.
So who's your number one defensive player?
I have Byron Murphy, the Texas DT, as my number one defensive player. I thought his stretch, final like six games of the season last year, was just unblockable, dominant. You saw it in the playoffs. You saw it in the Big 12 championship game. He was just, and went to the combine, absolutely blew it up. At that point, when the guy ticks all those boxes at that position that's increasingly more important in today's NFL, I just think he's a sure thing.
Mike Renner in studio with us. You can catch his coverage throughout the draft on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with Bleacher Report and their draft coverage. Mike, so let's assume for a moment the Giants are not going to move up to draft a quarterback. Of the two, and let's also assume Marvin Harrison Jr. is off the board. Of the two receivers, and I believe all three are going to be legit. Of the two receivers at the top with Odunze and with Neighbors, who do you pick if you are the Giants wanting to pair a receiver with Daniel Jones?
This one's tough. I think for the Giants specifically, I lean Rome Odunze, because they have like a whole litany of slot receivers. Like, they have five different guys that can play the slot for them. And Malik Neighbors, for as much as, you know, I think he could play outside, he was a slot receiver for LSU, and it's going to be a learning curve for him to do so. With Odunze, there's no learning curve. And, you know, if you're Joe Shane, you need to save your job. You need to win right now.
Yeah.
You need a guy who can impact right now. And to me, Odunze is just like NFL ready, number one outside wide receiver, plug and play. Maybe doesn't have the high end that Neighbors and Harrison could get to, but his high end's pretty high. I'm not going to lie, he could be a 1,500-yard type of wide receiver. And so for them specifically, I would lean there.
Why, if a player after his freshman year, we all remember the hype around Brock Bowers. If this dude went to the league, he'd be a first-round pick right now if he was allowed to go. How does that guy go on to not be mentioned very much in this draft, in an offensive draft for the national championship winning Georgia Bulldogs after the injury, coming back and trying to get to another one in back-to-back years. Where do you come down on this, and where do we think he is ultimately on Thursday night?
I feel a little responsible for this because really? I have been banging the table since Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts, you're just saying tight ends don't make the impact that wide receivers do. You know, they're okay. You look at the his track record of first-round tight ends, and they just do not hit the same way wide receivers do. That being said, with Brock Bowers, he's a different animal. I watch his tape, and I'm like, just call this guy a wide receiver. Call him a slot wide receiver. And he is the best slot wide receiver in this draft class. His hands, his route running ability, off the charts. And now the one knock, and like you say, after his freshman year where he was, you know, out the number one target with a team that had Adonai Mitchell, with a team that had Ladd McConkey, Jermaine Burton, three guys that will be top 75 picks at wide receiver in this year's draft. He was the number one guy on that team. That makes me feel good about him. But then he never got bigger. You know, he never got into number one type of tight end size, which is, I think, the one reason why you're seeing that. But I throw that all out the window. This guy is unbelievable at the game of football. I think he's the top 10 player in this draft, and I would draft him as such.
So at seven, it's not a reach, you're saying?
I would not call that a reach at seven, no.
Okay. I'm not seeing that. And I think I tend to believe he's going to get drafted later, unless it's Tennessee, later, and everyone's going to be like, oh, great value pick, or steal of the draft. You know, yeah. And no one's mentioning him as a top 10 player now.
It's kind of like, you know, when Kyle Hamilton.
Except for Mike Brenner, by the way.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Kyle Hamilton came out.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Poking holes in his game, but ever since his freshman year, he did nothing but dominate at safety. And it's like, oh, you know, at that size, can he play safety? Isaiah Simmons just came out and wasn't good at it. Goes to the NFL, and it's like.
Chad, and you can see it. He ends up with the Rams or the Chiefs or whoever. The Rams move up because, you know, F them picks. Mm-hmm. They move up to go draft that type of player, and all of a sudden it's. How dare these other teams pass that player up?
Well, you mentioned a name there. Is there a chance Ladd McConkey's a first-round pick?
I am his top 32 player. I wouldn't put it out of the question. Now, it is a really strong wide receiver class, and like I said, I do think you'll see teams maybe passing that want wide receivers, but just think they can get one in the second round because there's so many guys. But based off his tape, what he did this past year, and then goes down and what he did at the Senior Bowl, would not surprise me, especially with the Bills, with the Chiefs needing wide receiver at the back end of the first round.
And last one for me, is the Rams the sneakiest, best spot for a quarterback to be taken, given their situation with Matthew Stafford and their coaches?
I've mocked Bo Nix to them a handful of times there at 19 because they haven't had a first-round pick since Jared Goff, and that was the last time they had it. And so when you tend to throw away your premium picks, you want to use those when you do have them on premium positions. So I do think it would be a great situation for whichever quarterback if they do draft one.
Yeah, now I think McCarthy too is that type of fit for that offense. And again, they don't mind, they draft so well third round and beyond. They don't mind trading away picks. Any big surprise that you think will jump into the first round, Mike?
Big surprise jumping? I don't really think there's any big surprise.
There's no offensive lineman from Chattanooga, for instance.
Well, no. Belichick's out the league, so thankfully no. But I don't think any big surprise just because the top of this class is so good. Like I've been saying it a bunch, but these players are so good at the top that there's no real sneaky guy to pop in because there's going to be a pretty much a consensus around how good the top like 25 or so guys are in this draft class.
And where are the defensive players? Why the lack of defensive players?
That's a great question. It's just yearly fluctuation, right? I think you just if you compared this draft to 2 years ago, 2022, when Trayvon Walker went number one overall.
Yeah.
Trayvon Walker goes like 15th in this draft. 16th. It's that good of a class, right?
Came out the right year.
Exactly.
So we're here.
So I don't know if there's
everyone's going to want to trade back is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, not bad defenders, but insane offensive talent that's not there every year.
Mike, thank you, man. Always great. Who do you think ends up with Drake May? You think he goes to Washington and then Patriots draft?
No, I think as a Packers fan, sadly, I have a bad feeling in my gut that he goes to
Minnesota.
The Vikings.
Okay. Mike Renner. Again, check out his coverage, Bleacher Report.
On the CJ Stroud, Micah Parsons.
Yes, yes.
For the draft.
Legit coverage there. And, of course, with us, you can check out us and Clay.
Meanwhile, we get Clay.
Yeah, we got Clay.
Yeah,
fine. Join us tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern.